Hi, you're listening to a podcast brought to you by the teaching team at New Life in North Lincolnshire. New Life is committed to helping transform people and transform places through the love and power of Jesus Christ. We hope you, in some small way, will be blessed and transformed by this message.
Well, good morning. It's been a while since I've been up here. In fact, Mother in Sunday was the last time I was up here. So if you don't know me, and you've joined in the last few weeks or so, and you're going, who is that strange man standing on the stage? My name's Dan. I'm one of the pastors here at New Life, and it's a privilege to meet you. If it is your first time here, my mouth will engage with my brain at some point in the next 30 seconds or so, and then it will get a lot easier from here on in. So if it is your first time here this morning, I'd love to chat with you afterwards. It'd be great to hear a little bit more about you, what's brought you to New Life this morning, and whether there's anything we can do to help you as a church. And it'd be great to just chat and to hear a little bit about what Jesus might be doing in your life this morning. Now, show of hands, okay, has anybody been on their summer holidays yet? Not yet. Some of you are like waiting. Now, see, my wife and I are in a privileged position because our daughter is not yet like primary school age. And what that means is that we've already done our main summer holidays, because in about 2 weeks' time, the costs go astronomically high. And so we tend to go away in June and then again in September. This is the last full year we'll be able to say that. And so this time next year, I'll be commiserating with all of you school-age parents in terms of sort of the cost of holidays going forward. So we went away to North Yorkshire a couple of weeks ago. Just Elena and I, Abigail, went for a week-long sleepover at her grandparents'. Can I get a hallelujah? It was amazing. And we just went away for a week together. But growing up, this time of year was always building towards the anticipatory moment when, as a family, we would pack our car and we would drive across the width of the country. So I grew up in Cambridge, sort of South Cambridge in North Hertfordshire, for those of you who know that part of the world. And we would drive literally across two countries to the middle of Wales. About a 3.5-hour drive to Aberystwyth, right in the centre of the Cardigan Bay. It's an amazing place and somewhere that is still really sentimental for me. I have a lot of fond memories about these holidays growing up. Because you see, it wasn't just me and my sister and my mum and my dad. It was my aunts and uncles, it was my grandparents, it was all of my cousins, and like 16 to 20 of us would pack out this old, run-down, dilapidated, smelly farmhouse on a dairy farm. And I tell you, it was the best holidays. As we spent time on beaches, sort of taking on whatever the Welsh countryside could throw at us, whatever the weather was doing, we would always be able to find somewhere to do something together as a family. And it was an amazing time together. And it's still something that I absolutely look forward to. This time of year, I find myself sort of building towards that sense of expectation, anticipation, even though I no longer go away during the 6 weeks. We're not away now until September, and so I feel like all of this anticipation is building to like a really long way off, and I'm going to have to wait a little while before we get there. Anybody else sort of had similar sort of experiences growing up? Maybe you've always been to the same place. Maybe you've been abroad. Maybe you've travelled to different places on your travels. Maybe you've always just done a six-week holiday break here in Scunthorpe, and you've enjoyed the fullness of North Lincolnshire on your holidays. The other thing that I remember about those holidays growing up was the week before it. The week before we would go away, my mum always used to say she used to feel like she needed a week to prepare for a week away and then a week again to catch up. So any week away as a parent, she needed at least 3 weeks to prepare for and then like debrief and declutter and all the washing and all that sort of stuff. Now, my mum worked in a primary school. She worked in an admin office. And so sometimes our holiday away would be the first week of the summer holidays. And so her last week of term, with all of the end of school year money trips and swimming lessons for the next term and school uniforms and all the bits and pieces, and it would coincide with washing week. And she would be the most stressed. She's quite a stressed lady anyway, my mother. Or at least she manifests stress in different ways. But that week in particular, when she was trying to finish off the last week of the school year and set up for this week away, it was always like washing was just on every spare surface. Bags were out. And then the day would come. Finally, that great and good day when we would have to pack our bags. And I would be trying to cram as much as I could physically fit into my bag. If I was really, really well prepared, I would usually pack the day before. Sometimes at midnight. often it would just be sort of grabbing a collection of things that were around my bed and sort of finding a backpack for them to sit in, and then just hoping that the weather would be dry for the whole week, which in Wales in July is a bit of a risky strategy. But this packing thing, right? So I don't know if you've ever had this as you've been going away. You're not sure what the weather's going to do. You're not sure kind of where it is you're going to or what you're going to need when you get there. And so what do? We tend to overpack. We overprepare, partly because of the unpredictability of the English summertime, let's be honest. Or equally, we have the opposite problem if we go abroad. At the end of the holiday, when we've not just got like one suitcase, but we've got a weight allowance, and we're now trying to physically fit as much as possible because of all the lovely clothes we've seen in Spain or wherever it is that we've been, and we're now physically trying to sit and squash our suitcase to get as much as we can back into it, and then we just hope and pray that it's under the weight limit for the aircraft. Because, you know, these things could go either way at some point. We've had some close calls, I can tell you. Now, we never went abroad often enough to have sort of posh matching luggage or even suitcases. We would just sort of like travel with bin liners and holders and whatever we could find around the house. And what we found with these things over the years is after sort of this annual cycle of overstuffing and overfilling and then emptying and then refilling and then stretching and pulling and packing and everything else that went with it, what happens to your holders or your suitcases? They wear thin, don't they? They stretch, the zips break, they get a little bit threadbare in places. They start to show signs of wear and tear or the amount of miles that they've done, and they become tired and worn out. And I wonder whether we're the same as human beings. Not so much when we've eaten too much, I don't mean that sort of overfilling, but the things of the fabric of our everyday life that we just pour in and pull in and we try and get more into our lives because surely I've got enough capacity to do all of these things. And over time of filling and filling and taking more on and stuffing more into the suitcase of our life, we become a little bit like my holdall. A little bit thin in places, a little bit stretched in others. And I'm not so confident I've got the capacity to carry whatever I need to carry. Anybody else with me this morning? And so this is what I want to talk to us about today. You see, here's the thing. As human beings, as we overfill the contents of our lives, we begin to fatigue, worn out by the continual stretch of our own limited capacities, until we begin to wear out, unable to hold that which previously filled our life to the extent that we were before. In Matthew 11, where we're going to be spending our time today, verse 28 says this. It says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in spirit, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is good and my burden is light." See, the invitation this morning is really simple. If you're weary, if you're burdened, if you're overcommitted on a number of fronts, it's a simple invitation. Come to Jesus. Take on his yoke, for it is good and it is light to carry. And you go, "Dan, the last thing I need is something else added into my life. I'm already over full." Right? Does anybody know what a yoke is? Not the yellow thing that comes in the middle of an egg. That's a different sort of yoke. We'll talk about those things later. Anybody know what a yoke is or was? A few people. You most likely will have seen it tethering two oxes together if they're ploughing a field. It's that sort of imagery that's in play here, the idea of a wooden beam being across two oxen's back to keep them pulling straight together in line. But did you know that people can also carry yokes, more so at the time of Jesus than today, although in certain parts of the world you'll still see this playing out. A yoke is simply a wooden beam that sits across shoulders and allows people to bear more than the sum of their load, right? So when I was growing up, my dad's a landscape gardener, still is, and I went to work with him during summer holidays when we weren't in Wales. So I went out and earned pocket money. And one of the things that I learned quite quickly was that if I tried to pick up two bags of cement, which were about 25 kilos each, I couldn't do that for very long with just my hands. Right? But if I got them on my shoulders, I could carry them for a lot further. And a yoke is the same kind of thing. It's something that is a support mechanism that we use, something that a structure that we add to ourselves that allows us to carry more than our own load in an easier to manage way. Do you get that? And so when Jesus says, take on my yoke, he's not saying, hey, I get it, you're tired, put everything down. Don't carry everything, just abandon everything and float off into, I don't know, whatever that place is that we float off into. He's saying, what we need is a structure. We need a support mechanism, something that allows us to carry the things in our lives in a way that spreads that tension out, in a way that is manageable for us to carry. And this seems to be the opposite that we expect from rest today. Is that fair to say? If I think of, like, you know, Jesus, lead me to a place of rest, I'm like, I want it to be a mountain, but not one I've got to climb, one that I just appear at the top of and can just rest with all of the beauty of God's creation stretched out before me. I don't want the difficulty of the climb. I just want to be able to enjoy the bit at the top. Or maybe like a spa weekend is your thing, where you're like, I'm literally going to turn everything off. I'm getting some amens from down the front here. Fantastic. So maybe something like a spa weekend is your sort of thing, where you go, do you know, I'm going to lock my phone physically in the locker and it's going to be turned off. And as if that wasn't enough, I'm going to go to a quiet box of a room and have somebody else just look after my every need for the full weekend. That sounds pretty good, right? That's not the kind of rest that Jesus is talking about. But I tell you what, if you could give me the choice between a restful spa weekend and rest for my soul, I know which I'd choose. Because I don't know about you, I love the spa weekend while I'm there. It's great. But at some point I have to leave, right? And that's the main issue with it, because you have to go back to the things that we were trying to escape from in the first place, and we realise that actually, although we feel more relaxed at the end of a spa weekend, nothing about the fabric of our life has changed. And yet in Jesus, with his yoke, there is rest, not just for our body, but for our soul. I don't know about you, the times I've most felt weary of soul, do you know what I mean? Like tired in your bones. Looking back, I realise it's been those times that in feeling overwhelmed by the weight of things I'm trying to carry, I go, do you know, this yoke is too heavy. I'll take that off and I'll just try, because maybe if I can take the yoke off, I'll be able to carry the other things. Not realizing that it's the structures of following Jesus, the patterns of behavior that we keep, the rhythms of prayer and of worship and of time with him that allow me to carry the things in my life and find rest for my soul. I wonder if there's anybody else here this morning who's with me in that. I love how the translator of the New Testament, Eugene Peterson, puts this verse. He says, are you tired, worn out, burned out by religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Anybody want some of that this morning?
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me is I revisited the verse. And by the way, I tried to escape this sermon a few times this week. I was like, I don't feel well rested enough to be able to preach this. I don't really feel like I've properly entered into this rest that Jesus has. I was like, maybe I could find a different message, because I don't want to come across as disingenuous, but I thought rather than being disingenuous and just preaching it like I've got it all together, I'll just confess my sins to you this morning. Because I couldn't get away from it. And what I've realized is I've come to sit with this passage again and again and again, not really wanting to, but almost coming back to it on a daily basis, going, all right, Jesus, like, what is it? I've realized that in this passage, rest is less about a program and more about a person. Because when I feel overstuffed in the fabric of my life, I go, right, I just need a plan. If I can just get a plan together, if I can just organize my life better, if I can just find space for all of the things in my world, then I'll just feel more, I'll have more time to rest, in fact. Just magically, this time will appear from nowhere. And it, as I've come to this again and again, you know, the structure is the thing, the plan, the pattern, the model is the thing that allows us to bear the load. But it's not the thing that we find rest in. Rest is found in a person, and his name is Jesus. And so what I'm trying to discipline myself to do, try and hold myself to do, is especially on days where I feel overstuffed or where I feel thin, is to begin my day with the person in whom my rest is found. And on my busiest days, it's the last thing I want to start my day with, I'll be honest. I wake up and my head's going 100 miles an hour of all the things that I think I've got to try and fit into this day. And yet I am determined that my rest is found in a person, not in any plan or program. So I just want to be honest with you guys this morning. Right? There's no point me standing up here and going, hey, here's three steps to enter into rest. You know, no, Jesus has already told us. You don't need anything new from me this morning. For those of you that have been around church or have been following Jesus for a while, you will know this. I just want to remind us of that this morning. Because the thing is, these unforced rhythms of grace, what I'm learning is that the extent to which we are able to keep these rhythms to the best of our failing ability has a direct impact on our rhythm's abilities to keep us. I'm going to say that again. The extent to which we are able to keep these rhythms determines the extent of which these rhythms keep us. If I can't keep a regular rhythm of rest, a Sabbath, the very next passage that literally this verse moves on from in the start of Matthew chapter 12, and it's Jesus redefines what rest looks like within the context of Sabbath. I just think that's fascinating that here you've got a verse where you go, come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest. And then the next story is, hey, this day that we have for rest, we're getting it wrong. And Jesus redefines what that looks like within his context. And maybe that's something that we can think through in small groups over the course of this week. But if I can't keep my rhythms, if I cannot keep these habits, if I cannot make intentional space for these things to exist, even within the busyness of my life, when I really need them, they won't keep me. Because we live into the disciplines and the rhythms that we create. We become these things. We become the things that we do most often. Does that make sense? And I know you know this. There's nothing new up here today. If you're coming for sort of secret wisdom or anything like that, this isn't the place to find it, because none of this is new. We know these things. But sometimes, and particularly at the end of term, we need reminding of them. Has anybody been watching the tennis or the cricket this week? Tennis? Give me a show of hands for tennis. Show of hands for cricket. Okay, we're going to go with a tennis analogy. So, Carlos Alcaraz, right? He's been lighting up Wimbledon this week. I don't know if anybody's seen any of his matches. I've not seen them in full, but the highlight reels look absolutely outstanding. The guy is an athlete. Now, I used to play tennis. Not like that. I don't want you thinking, like, I play tennis like that. When I was about 11, right, me and a mate would go down the courts on a Sunday afternoon and just smack a ball for about an hour and a half. It was great fun. If I wanted to be like Carlos Alcaraz in a match against my friend when I was 11... you might see me running full pelt and diving athletically, which on tarmac would be a really bad thing. We didn't play on grass. You might see me trying to emulate and imitate the moves that he makes with a racket, the way that he hits the ball, or the way that he moves his feet, the way that he serves. But if I only ever try to imitate Alcaraz within the context of a match, I will never become the player that he is. In order to become the kind of player that he is, I would need to imitate him not just on game day, but on Monday. With the way that he trains, the way that he eats, the way that he disciplines himself, the mentality of his thinking. If I wanted to become a player like him, if I just did it on game day, I would never be, and let's be honest, I'm never going to be, as good a tennis player as he is. And one of the things I've noticed in my own life is when I realize I come to a moment of difficulty, a moment of tension, or a moment of temptation or trial, I try and bring all of my game day to it, right? And I try and imitate those followers of Jesus who have got it all together, or at least I think they've got it all together. Or I try and imitate Jesus. Jesus, what would you do in this moment of crisis? How would you behave, and how can I behave like that? And yet for the other 95% of my week, I don't imitate him in the ways that he orders his life. And then I'm surprised when the fruit of my life looks very different from his. But I don't do the same things. And so I wonder whether what we need as a church, what we need as followers of Jesus, isn't necessarily to ask the question, what would Jesus do right now? But in the times between the crises, what would Jesus be doing now? He might be spending time with Father in prayer. He might be spending time around a dinner table with friends. There's a whole host of things that Jesus does in between the moments that we see, but all of them contribute to his ability to arrive when it matters most. And that's the kind of thoughts that I want to focus on, really, as we move into what comes next. So my first question for you is this. Are you tired? Not just, I didn't sleep very well last night. Are you thin? Are you worn out? Is your fabric starting to pull? Do you feel threadbare? If you do, come to Jesus. Whether for the first time or for the 100th time, it doesn't matter. We come again to the person in whom our rest is found, and we begin again. But here's the second thing I want us to think about. One of the things that struck me as I've been preparing for today is this. Jesus was only able to offer rest, the space for other people to encounter rest in his person, because of the contents of the rest of his life. For those of us that have maybe been following Jesus for a little longer, or have been around church for a bit, or maybe slightly better practiced at resting in him, my question to you is this. Have you experienced his rest to such an extent that you can now offer rest to a world that is tired? Because I think our call as Christians, as followers of Jesus, is to become more like him, right? And here he is in Matthew 11, able to stand confidently and go, you look tired. Hey, come to me. Find rest. And I just wonder whether, in a world that seems so tired, so stretched to capacity, so limited in what it's able to add into itself, whether we, as followers of Jesus, could stand in a world and go, you look tired. Why don't you come to me? Not because of anything we have, but because of whom we have. Could it be that we, as followers of Jesus, could create spaces of rest for a tired world? What would that look like in your context, in your family life, in your workplace? It might be the way that we carry ourselves, the way that we talk about things. It might be that we're just comfortable with silence and sitting with an ease with people without feeling the need to tell them what to do. Because I already feel like there's a million things I need to do. I don't want somebody else telling me now extra things I need to add in. Sometimes what I need is just for somebody to sit and listen. to create space for me to be able to enter into a rest in their presence. We need friends like that, don't we? And I wonder whether we, as followers of Jesus here in North Lincolnshire, could be that, not just for our town, but for our county. To be people of rest in a tired world. And so all we're going to do now is two things. First, I'm just going to invite the band up to, they're going to lead us in a time of worship shortly. But the second is this, we're going to go into a time of communion. And the band are just going to surreptitiously begin to play behind me. Not for any magical reasons, it just helps us move through the service. And as you come to communion today, I want you to know this. You are welcome at this table.
Absolutely.
You are welcome at this table. I don't know your church backgrounds, I don't know your stories, many of you, I know some. I don't know what your experience of communion has been in other contexts, or whether you've not got any experience of communion. You go, I don't really understand what this is. But the first thing you need to know is you are welcome at this table. Whatever other tables you might feel excluded from in this world, whatever invites to dinner parties you might not get, this table you are welcome at. Not because it's New Life's table, but because the table belongs to Jesus.
Yep.
There's nothing to do with us, the reason why you're welcome here. It's his table. And he welcomes everybody to his table. No matter where they are, no matter how tired and worn out you might feel, no matter your experiences, your journey with Jesus up to this moment, this table is a table that you are welcome at. And so I would invite you this morning, if you want to engage in this moment, if you want to respond in some way, as you take the bread and you take the cup, why don't you just say again, maybe for the first time, maybe for the 100th, Jesus, I come to you. And then just wait and pause. And it will take us a little longer to get through communion than normal, and that's fine. Because there's space here for people to be able to do what they need with Jesus at his table. Would you stand? Lord Jesus, I thank you this morning that more than anything else in this world, no matter how tired in my bones I might feel, that I can find rest in you. I thank you that no matter how I feel about you on any given day, no matter what I'm going through, no matter what my emotions are doing on the insides of me, that I can come to you honestly in prayer. With no pretense, no expectations. As Dina said at the beginning, I can turn up as I am and just rest in you. Lord Jesus, would you teach me, would you teach us how to carry the things that we carry with grace? Would you teach us how to live? And I thank you that when we get it wrong, you welcome us back with open arms. You say, let's walk a little further. Work with me again. And let me show you how to live. But particularly for those who are tired this morning, for those who are worn out, I just pray for such a sense of refilling, for such a re-energizing, for such a sense of peace and of rest to sit on you over the rest of our service and over the rest of the day, that you would begin to learn what it feels like to to rest in him. Even in the middle of a chaotic world and busy lives and an overfilled calendar, Lord Jesus, would you teach us how to rest in you? And so I would just invite you, as you feel ready to, just begin to come. We've got four stations. We've got two at the front here, two at the back. We've got a team of people who would love to just minister to you this morning as you come to the table of Jesus. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this message from New Life in North Lincolnshire. To find out more, do visit us online at newlifechurch.uk, or why not pay us a visit? We'd love to see you.